Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Do you sing a jingle?
I don't sing a jingle. I wish I had a jingle. Maybe I should have a jingle.
I think you should have a jingle.
That'd be fun. Lin, lin, lin. Mad women in the attic.
Done.
That's it. And that is the podcast introduced. Hello and welcome to Mad Women in the Attic. This week I am joined by Anna Hunscott, stage manager extraordinaire.
Great, I'll take it.
Yeah. We're going to delve into the ridiculous things said to her by lovers, colleagues, and just about anyone with a smidge of prejudice. Anna, thanks for being here.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
So talk to me. Is there a sort of first time that you really can remember being made to feel a bit crazy or a bit mental?
Well, I was thinking long and hard about this. Because I think my first sort of awareness of the word crazy being used to label someone else was with my dad calling my mum crazy. Ooh. And being like...
We've gone straight into it, guys.
Straight in. Yeah. But in like a very lighthearted, like, oh, well, of course, because your mum's crazy. And at the time, I didn't really ever think about it. But now looking back, it's such a like a weighted word. So I think that was probably my youngest. And I was probably, I don't know, maybe 14 then. And so then when anyone ever would use that word with me, I immediately associated that sort of situation with my mum and her level of craziness, right, in air brackets. And in terms of like people actually calling me crazy, I think I've been relatively lucky in that I don't have standout examples of, yeah, of someone actually calling me crazy, but I have a zillion tiny little like chips away.
Yes.
Especially with work, I would say.
I think that is something quite interesting in our industry.
Yes.
And specifically what you do in this industry.
Yeah.
Where you work with men behind the scenes.
Yep.
Of theatre.
Yeah.
So I also work as a stage manager, and Anna and I have worked together. We both know exactly what it's like to go into a situation,
yeah,
as the only female, need to get a job done.
I think as well, the only female in a position of authority. A lot of the times we are in charge of load-ins and turnarounds and things like that. And the amount of times that you are talked over or just ignored. I think my favourite example is while I was still at university. So I was maybe 19, and I am blessed with a baby face. So when I was 19...
She's adorable, guys.
When I was 19, I looked about 14 years old. And I was still, you know, I didn't have the confidence and I didn't have the voice to sort of argue against this. But we went and put a show into an old steelworks factory in Sheffield, where I went to university. And the guy that ran the factory, he was like a steel worker, Sheffield man. And I was there focusing some lights and stuff like that. And I needed some information about power. And I went and spoke to him. And he literally couldn't look me in the eyes. And then said the words, "Oh, when's your boss getting here, love?" And I was like, "Oh, no, 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 that's me. I am the boss of this situation." And he was so rude to me. And my reaction then, and still, you know, can be to now, when I get really angry, I cry. And it's the most frustrating thing. Yeah. But it's just like that lack of control. So I got so annoyed that I angry cried, which was the worst thing to do. Because then he basically could just be like, "Oh, Petal, like, you know, this is all a bit too much for you." And in the end, it got so bad and I was so nervous about not getting the show up on time that I had to call the guy that I was seeing at the time, who had a tiny relation to theatre, and get him to come to the steel factory so that this man could speak to my boyfriend at the time, who would then like relay the information between us.
That is horrifying.
Shocking.
In so many different ways.
Absolutely shocking.
Thing is, I'm disgusted, but I'm not that shocked.
No, I know, right? I know. Like, and I think at that point, I was like, oh, this is a one-off experience because I am really young and we're in, you know, a factory that's not like a theatre setting. And so I was hopeful that as I move forward in my career, I wouldn't come across people like that again. And unfortunately, that has not been the case.
That is a particularly...
That's my favourite.
That is, yeah, quite something.
So in the situation that the show that Rachel and I worked on together, and now Rachel works on her own, it's us and then two guys. And the amount of times that people will direct conversations to one of those guys, and they don't have a clue.
Yeah, I know.
Like, as much I love them dearly, but they have zero clue. And they are both really good. And this is something that I wanted to talk about as well, in the sense of people being allies in that situation. So I've had situations, especially being on tour abroad, where people have tried to speak to one of the boys and both of them will just go, I don't have a clue, but Anna will know exactly what's going on because she's in charge. And I think that is really important, especially for men, to see when it's happening and to identify and be like, oh, no, and call it out.
I completely agree. And that has been really nice, particularly on this show.
I was talking to my housemates about, I was sort of gathering stories that I could bring to this. And Cassie, my housemate, works in lighting and TV, which is a real male-orientated industry. And often she's the only female in the lighting industry on whatever show she's doing. And she says that she has it again and again and again, that people will ignore what she's suggesting and rig bits of kit incorrectly. And she'll be there going, I really think that we should be doing it like this, this and this. And then it'll get to the end and someone will go, oh, wait, we should have done it like that. And she said it used to be really frustrating, but now more and more, when that happens, it still happens. So they still get to the point where they realize they've done it wrong. And then someone will go, oh yeah, Cassie said we should have done it like that. And she was saying it in the sense of being like, that's quite gratifying that people are like, oh yeah, Cassie did say that and we all ignored her and now we've got to do this again. But I was like, surely what would be more rewarding was that they just listened to you in the first place.
Yeah, that person that's then on your side at the end when it's gone wrong, if they could just say something at the time.
Right at the time.
But people feel like it's hard to go out on a limb.
Yeah.
Especially packs of men, dare I say, working together. Do you know what is interesting that you said? We've talked a lot on this podcast about crying.
Oh, okay.
It's very difficult to maintain a sense of authority after you've cried.
Mm.
But it's really, really hard not to.
Yeah.
When you are frustrated and angry at the situation, and I kind of think it's a bit of a vicious circle.
Yeah, why is that? Why do tears come?
I don't know.
That's so unhelpful.
But I think it's harder for you.
Well, I think what I have found to be the case, I used to be very quick to anger in situations that I felt were unjust or unfair. And then that would then lead to the angry crying. And then I felt like I totally lost my position of authority in that situation. And so what I found was the way to manage that was I have to let it go. Like I have to let it wash over me. And I don't let myself get angry anymore, which in one sense is good, I guess, in terms of getting my job done, because it means that I just let it go and get the job done. And then I come back and like process and deal with it later. But what it does mean is that I'm allowing people to get away with situations that I should be calling people out. But in my head, it's like a toss-up between, which probably makes me like an awful female for not calling people out. I don't know what the right thing in that situation to do is.
There's a strength in not saying anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I'm there yet. I can't bite my tongue.
Yeah, well, this is why I sent Rachel a link to a Guardian article yesterday that was a quiz about how angry you were. Your score was entirely accurate, I feel, to what I would imagine that you would get.
That is not necessarily a compliment.
I say it from a place of love because I am exactly the same. Rachel and I both got results that said that we should seek
professional help. Yes. So it was basically you added it up as you went along and it was a score out of three. And it was stuff like, how angry do you get if you feel like someone has done something personally to you that is unjust?
Yeah.
Or if you see somebody driving like a twat?
Yeah.
And I get quite angry in those. Fairly. I mean, they're very frustrating.
The real Anna needs to seek professional help for her rage issues. But professional Anna has managed to maintain this calm exterior,
yeah.
which has been an effort. Definitely.
I bet, but also important professionally because once you've got these kind of crazy, mad, psycho labels,
yes.
it's hard.
And your own, there's this thing about you're only ever as good as your last job. The second that you get tarred with one of those labels, it's impossibly hard to get rid of it, which is, I think, why so many people struggle through situations that they really needed to ask for help in. And yeah. they do paper over the cracks so much because everyone's petrified of not getting work again. When you work in a, you know, a freelance industry, it's... You never know when, you know, if you take time out for your own sort of well-being or anything like that, you're all of a sudden in limbo because you're out of the loop of then getting work for the next thing. Mental health within the arts is tricky. It's so, so tricky.
Yeah, you don't have any sort of separation is what no. I find between home life and work life.
No.
You don't get to leave it. It's always there.
Well, I think as well, because it's something that you are so innately passionate about as well, that you pour your soul into it as well. I think being stage managers, that you do have to present this really put together persona. And often as well, you are looking after people that need more support. I mean, being a performer is incredibly emotionally draining. And as stage management, you have pastoral care. No one's taught us how to do any of that. Pastoral care, and a lot of it we should be signposting, but we don't know how to do that, and we don't know where to signpost to. So you do end up becoming sort of this untrained, unqualified therapist position, which is actually really dangerous for everyone.
And it's hard to know what the right thing to say is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do think being female is then just, you're just adding it onto the list yeah. because it's all well and good until something goes wrong. And then all of a sudden it all comes crashing down and it's all your fault. So I think you have to protect yourself in situations like that and like flag it to the right people. I'm again, much better at that now, but there was definitely a time when I was sort of just starting out that I would just take it all on board and let it affect me personally as well, and then not share it with, you know, producers, because you feel like a sense of loyalty to people that are confiding in you as well. But actually, you have to be able to strike the balance and remember it's a job.
Yeah, remember it's just a job. Do you find, because you're a woman, people assume that you're a good listener, that you're sensitive in that respect?
Yes, I think so, definitely. I think I have an awful memory, so people confide in me and then I forget what has happened, which is just shocking. But I do think that is, you're seen as like this sort of nurturing caregiver, mother hen type yeah. person. I absolutely can play into that, but that isn't, I'd say, my natural standpoint. Like I can be quite sort of firm and
brutal.
Yeah, I was skirting around using that word, but I'm glad you went straight into it.
100%.
Which doesn't really fit in with the nurturing caregiver mode. So yeah. I feel like it's a hat that I wear occasionally, because you have to play into it sometimes, right?
Yeah, you do. I think I struggle to do that with men more than I do with women.
Yes.
I can be very nurturing to other women.
Yeah.
But with male performers, sometimes all I've got is sarcasm. Yeah. and I want to be there for them, but I'm like, I don't really have this in me right now.
No, I know, right? It is funny. It's really interesting. It's a really tricky balance as well, I find, with men, especially men that are older, that you want to be supportive and there, but you also don't want to be misconstrued to be giving any incorrect signals.
That is it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're 100% right. So that's then it.
Sarcasm yeah. is like the best form.
Yeah, because, you've got to protect yourself.
Yeah, because you don't. I had a situation recently that I was introduced to someone that works in this industry. I think I have to be quite careful about how I say all of this. I was introduced to someone through friend of a friend, and it was a social situation, and I was like, put my best foot forward, because there was a chance that, you know, there might be a work relationship at some point in the future.
Yeah,
so I was Anna a game, like very friendly, chat, lovely. And then a couple of weeks later, the friends that had introduced us got in touch to say, oh, this person's asked for your number. And I was like, why would they ask for my number? That wasn't the vibe at all. Bearing in mind, this person is male. And the conversation that we'd had had been about like sleeping with girls, and like about they were doing a show that had a lesbian in, and we were talking about representations of lesbians on stage and how difficult it was that they were a male. So all of this, so he had no idea that I would even want to go on a date with him. And he pursued, he asked my friend so many times, then he added me on Facebook, and I just was like, who, this is such an abuse of power and position.
Yeah, it's interesting that that was the conversation as well, because there's a real fetishization of bisexuality.
Oh my god. Yes,
it's a real tightrope talking to men about that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and you know this better than most.
I know this so well.
I'm just outing you on a podcast, is that okay?
Yeah, it's totally fine.
I mean, let's be honest, you're not particularly in.
No. Yes, I have this a lot with guys that I start to see that are obsessed with this idea that they're sleeping with a lesbian, or that they're like, they're the one that can turn me back or anything like that. It's really bizarre. And often as well, it's just like a real, I think it's like a sense of male pride almost. You could go out and like snog a girl and that wouldn't be cheating, but if you went and snogged a guy, that would be like the end of the world. It's such a weird world to inhabit. Yeah, men are fucking weird.
And if we've learned nothing else, guys,
that's the takeaway.
All of television history is contained in the Box of Delights.
I've climbed up Nelson's column once before.
These are small.
And put it down in front of Bagpuss.
I'm Julia Rayside. Join me and my guests as we dip into our favourite TV memories.
Suppose Martin Hurley bashing her head like this.
You can't tell me what to do. You ain't my mother.
I love when a plan comes together.
Come and tell us what yours are too.
We've all been told we can't discuss nominations.
It's a bit of car air.
Shut up. With a novel on the top.
I think I'm like you, Lovejoy.
Find us on Twitter at Box Delights Pod and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Big Owl.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So recently, you worked on Company on the West End.
I did.
With Rosalie Craig.
Yes.
And
Patti LuPone.
Yes. Who has her own reputation.
Yes, she is a good one to talk about, actually.
Right.
I hadn't thought about this. You're very clever.
Well, it comes and goes.
Patti has a reputation that precedes her. She is a Broadway superstar, I'd say. I don't think she's as well known over here, but she has so many. So everyone has a Patti story. When you tell them that you're working with Patti LuPone, they'll be like, oh, my friend did this and la la la. So the main thing is that she has a well fought out in public ongoing issue with, oh my God, I've just totally forgotten his name. Andrew Lloyd Webber. There we go.
She has
like a long running feud with Andrew Lloyd Webber because when they were doing Vita, she did a Vita over here and it got transferred to Broadway and Andrew didn't take her. Mm. And she got told just before she was going on to do a show over here. And the story goes that she ripped a chair off the wall in her dressing room and threw it, right? So this is sort of the level of Patti story that you hear. And she will say in interviews that she is allowed to act like that because she's so talented. That's
really, she'll say that.
Yes. So she says she's allowed to be a diva because she has the talent. Oof. Which is, yeah.
It's an interesting standpoint there, isn't
it? I know, right? It is. And there's something in that as well, how long she's been in the industry for and all of that kind of stuff, that she feels like she's earned that standpoint. So going into company, I was nervous because I remember I watched an interview with her where she was like, I don't see the point of tech. Why should I stand around and wait for other people? Like, we shouldn't have to stand through tech.
Oh, God, they are the worst.
Right, I know, right? So I was really nervous going in. Now, I would say that Patty had a good time on Company, but I think that's because everyone was bending over backwards to make sure she had a good time, which, you know, was sort of for the good of the show. And she is a delight a lot of the time, like really friendly, and she knew everyone's name backstage, and, you know, it was...
That's nice.
It was lovely. But she also screamed in our faces quite a lot. So.
See, I just find that completely unacceptable behaviour from performers.
I agree.
I just, in what context? How can you justify that?
Right. And a lot of the time it would be, you know, in tech where she's coming off stage and we literally haven't had the time to like put some glow tape down or something. And she's sort of like screaming in people's faces about how it's unsafe and all of that. And which is totally fine. But what she doesn't see is the fact that, you know, we've been up all night so that we can just get on stage and tech. And there was no wiggle room, like absolutely zero.
No recognition that you guys have a really hard job.
Yeah, she was an interesting one. And definitely she is one of those people would label as crazy, I would say.
And I think they do it in quite, it's quite damaging, but it's also, they do it in quite a fun, flippant way. I think there's something very industry chic.
Yes.
In that commentary, yes, you know?
Yes. This is when I wanted to bring in the thing with females in the industry, especially women in lead roles who get flagged as crazy or anything like that. There was a really well-publicised thing with Sheridan Smith last year, who was in Funny Girl, and there was like absolute chaos around it because lots of times she would come on and appear drunk. They had to cancel a show like 15 minutes in one day, and it was, the curtain came down and they were told that it was technical difficulties, but everyone in the audience was tweeting about how drunk Sheridan was and all of this. There's a famous thing about how apparently she threw a bottle of champagne at the producer's head one night and all of this, and in the end she left and the Undercity stepped up. And all of the stuff, if you Google it now, all of the you know, the Daily Mail headlines or like Sheridan has a meltdown, like all of this, and it's so damaging, and the words around it are so unfair, and calling her a psycho and crazy and all of that, when actually when you look into it, she was losing her dad to terminal cancer.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Sheridan Smith is an actress and West End star and a singer. She was Smithy's sister in Gavin and Stacey, and was in Legally Blonde, and has just had incredible roles and is sort of seen as one of the big stars of the West End. She is spectacular, and I looked this up, and all of the stuff around it, all of the ones that weren't interviews with her,
yes,
were calling her mental and psycho. And then Graham Norton did that horrible joke at the BAFTAs about we're all going to have a few glasses of technical difficulties.
Yeah.
And there was that awful, I watched the clip of it, cringy moment where like everybody laughed apart from the people surrounding her who didn't know if it was okay to laugh or not. And she tried to smile, and it was just sad.
Yeah.
And she knew, like, you know, she said that she knew things were getting on top of her, but she also felt like, as a young woman in the theatre, you have to take every single opportunity, because if you take any time out,
that's it, you're done.
People forget about you.
And this really damaging thing of the show must go on, which is so damaging, I think. Actually, what it needed was for someone just to go, right, this is it. We're calling this. Let's put the Undercity on. You know, let's give you some time off.
Yeah, you're right. I think it snowballed on her.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think she just needed somebody to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, really interestingly, so she hasn't really been in anything since that. And now she's coming back to do, she's in Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. And it's so interesting hearing people talk. And, you know, I get a lot of sort of
industry chatter.
But everyone's making a joke about it. Everyone's like, oh, Sheridan, you wouldn't, you know, you'd be really nervous about having her in your cast. I feel like everyone is watching her to see if she'll slip up again, which is just really sad, actually.
Really sad.
And this is, it was sort of the same thing with Saran Jones leaving Frozen as well. So Saran Jones, again, incredible actress who was sort of shot to fame with Dr. Foster in 2015. And then off the back of that, had another TV show that I can't remember the name of, but then got the lead in Frozen, which was basically about paedophilia. It was really dark. And she left halfway through the show. And again, it was that thing of people being like, oh, she's had a meltdown, she can't deal with it. And she actually, in the interview she did, or, you know, anything surrounding that, did say, it's the subject matter is really dark and I can't really cope with it. But again, it was that situation of someone having to get to the point of breaking before they could seek help.
Yeah, that is sad. I didn't know that. Where was Frozen on? When was it on?
It was last year or the year before. I think it was on at the Haymarket. I might have been wrong, but it was a dark show and a really dark subject matter. And she basically passed out in the middle of the show.
Oh my goodness.
Backstage, because it was just too much. And it had got to the point where she was having massive anxiety attacks.
There's just not enough importance placed on mental well-being.
No, it's a real issue, I'd say, within the arts in general.
I'm going to ask a personal question. Watch out, guys. Relationship-wise,
yeah.
You mentioned Dr. Foster and the sort of terrible gaslighting that goes on within that before she goes on to seek these very complex and brutal revenges on the...
Yeah, so much.
Has there ever been anything like that for you?
Not that extreme, I don't think. I say this really like cringy thing about losing my voice within relationships. And that has definitely happened to me before, where I just go into myself and don't say things that I'm thinking or that I feel because I'm scared of losing that person, because they have so much more control in a relationship than I do. And I think that is really damaging.
Yeah, that is. And I think, well, that's one of the main things about the labelling of women as emotional or crazy or anything like that is as a way to silence them. Relationships are about power, about who has the voice.
Absolutely.
And if you're not the one with the voice, then you're not the one with the power.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've definitely had relationships where I have been scared about having any voice because I've wanted so desperately to stay in that relationship that the thought of like saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing would mean them leaving. So it's such a power play.
This is an interesting one for me, I think. What do you find it different in relationships with men and women?
Oh my God, so staggeringly different. yes, 100%. My personal experience, relationship with women are so much more level pegging and equal. There isn't any sense of like, of losing that voice, I guess. I mean, it's such like a head fuck, I would say. And I'm still sort of exploring relationships and sexuality and all of that kind of stuff. And generally, I always, in my head, I always would prefer to have a relationship with a woman because of that equal footedness and that sense of like being a team. But there's also something in me that I kind of find it sexy, that like power play thing as well with men, which is so fucked up. But it's why I still sleep with men, because there is something about them like having a louder voice than you, or in the sense of like feeling like you're the submissive within that or something like that. So it's kind of a head fuck in that sense, because you're like actively every day trying to be on an equal footing with men, right?
Yeah.
You're fighting for it. And then behind the scenes, there's still like a bit of me that's like, oh, it's kind of hot though, isn't it? Like, which is so fucked up.
You know what is terrible? It's terrible because it's true. Yeah, you are bigger and stronger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. You tell me what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that shouldn't be like gender specific, right? That should just be anything. But in my experience, I have yet to find the perfect woman who will tell me what to do. If you're out there.
So if you're out there, get in touch, find the podcast. I'll post a picture of Anna. She's adorable, guys.
But yeah, it is really hard. And I think there's that thing of no one's perfect, right? And we're all just like striving to...
But we're also, sorry to interrupt, because I didn't know what you were going, where you were going with that one.
Neither did I don't think so.
we're also, women are conditioned to want the approval of men.
Yeah.
Whereas we're not really conditioned to want the approval of other women, which is potentially why our relationships, sexual relationships with women, can be more equal. Because nobody's bending over backwards to please each other.
Hey.
Conversationally, I mean. I just loved, you can't see it, but the little glint around his eye as she went to say that.
I was just quite excited because we've managed to turn this from like a really great podcast into a sex podcast, which of course was always going to be the way.
It was just always going to be.
But I think that is the thing is, again, with like with my housemate saying that at work people are going, oh no, yeah, Cassie did say that. It is like we're showing signs of improvement. Yeah. And that's all that we can hope for, right? Is in sense, obviously we can hope for it to be 100% equal, but I mean like on a daily basis, like all we can hope is that more and more people will recognize that in those situations where women are getting put down or talked over, is other people going, no, hang on a minute, like that, you listen, like you just need to listen.
Yeah.
So I think we just have to hope that that is becomes the norm. And eventually
something will change.
Yeah.
I think that is an excellent stopping point.
Yeah. So I feel like I've just
fixed the world. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks,
Anna,
for
Hunt-Scott.
Having me.
Hi guys.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.